Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is our Tech Guy podcast for Sunday, May 12th, Mother's Day 2013. This show originally appeared on the premier radio networks, including 200 stations in the U.S., and our new XM satellite channel, XM244. This is episode 978. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Ring Central. I love my cloud-based phone system from Ring Central. Zero startup costs. And Ring Central is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, like affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY. You'll get $10 off at checkout. Well, how are you today? Hey, 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 Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time for the show you've all been waiting for, A Geek and His Gadgets. If you've got a gadget, if you've got little technology on your desk, maybe a computer, the internet, cell phone, home theater, Windows 95, 98, ME, Vista, XP, 7 or 8. This is the place for you. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. You'll be talking to Heather, H-Bomb. She's waiting for your call, saying, I want to get a, I got a question or a comment or a suggestion. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number to call. We were just, Heather and I were just talking about this giant catalog. Holy cow. This is from Restoration Hardware, right? This is bigger than the old Yellow Pages.
Exactly. We were transported to the 60s and Sears Roebuck came and I've got to order jeans for school.
I can understand why you'd send out the Yellow Pages because there's still people who don't have the internet, I guess. Right? I mean, I'm straight to recycling for me, and I hate to think of how many trees just went from happy little tree life to paper mill to pulp to printer to my house via truck to recycling.
Right.
All for no purpose at all. And this is worse because this is it's as thick as a yellow as a big city Yellow Pages, but it's all glossy. Lots of ink involved. So there's an app for this, you know. No, I know. It sounds silly, but here's
for recycling?
The
recycling? What?
No, there's an app where you take pictures of the mail you don't want to get anymore.
Oh.
And they contact the company and say, hey, Leo didn't want this anymore. You sign up with it, and then you use your smartphone. I'm just looking through the my app. It's called Paper Karma.
I love it.
Is that a good name? There are actually a couple of them, but this is the one I've used. So you have an account with them, so they know your address and all of that. And then they contact on your behalf Restoration Hardware or any other company that sends catalogs, and they say, hey, Leo didn't want this anymore. And it works.
It's not you, it's Leo. They say that.
Yeah, they do. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just Leo. It's, you know, he needs to live his life a little bit.
He needs his space.
He needs his space.
He's not shopping right now.
But, you know, someday maybe. So you keeps track of your requests, so I can scan the mail that I'm getting. You can take a photo of it with your smartphone. I'm doing it right now with this Restoration Hardware thing because this is ridiculous. What a waste. And it's, by the way, it's to Leo Laporte or current resident. You know, that's when you know. Now, you got to take a picture that includes the company in it. All right. We'll get the whole thing. And
so,
then...
Yeah, Restoration Hardware didn't even care, really, that it was you.
No, like, current resident is fine.
Current resident would work.
We'll take
for
anybody.
That's kind of
whoever wants this. And then you say what the address was. It's actually, all you really need is the company. Try to clearly capture the sender's name, your name and address, and any tracking codes. Now, Restoration Hardware makes that hard because they've spread it out over the entire page. But I, you don't think that's because of this paper karma, do you?
On purpose?
No, couldn't be. So you can add all your name and addresses to it. And then you press a button that says unsubscribe me. And I've done this with all the catalogs. This is, you know, you always think, oh, you know, someday I'll get online and I'll say, don't send me the catalog anymore. But this is better because you just have your phone and you snap a picture.
It's quicker and easier. Yeah, because otherwise you're like, I'm going to make the phone call. I'm going to make the do the email, and then you just don't.
See, technology really does help sometimes.
Yeah.
Of course, every you know, you're sitting at a restoration. Well, maybe I don't know about you. I think we got you a cheap desk. But the desks behind you are Restoration Hardware, the office furniture, the studio equipment, all the gear. We bought a lot of stuff from Restoration Hardware, so it's not that I don't like them. Paper Karma is... What are you looking at me for?
That's a good desk.
John, our studio manager, says we
Where's
gave you a good desk.
Look at this plastic.
It doesn't look like the best desk I ever saw in my life. It doesn't sound like wood. Is it? It's not IKEA, is it?
What does it do? It's kind of IKEA-ish. Not saying
it goes up and down, though.
Okay,
see, Restoration Hardware won't do that.
You want to stand up?
Look at that.
I might someday.
This is great.
If she ever wants to stand up.
Would it bounce along with...
Hey, I got a new desk I'm really happy about, as long as we're talking about technology desks. I set my up desk up yesterday.
Cool.
So this is kind of... You know, this is the latest thing now, is people are standing. Sometimes they're sitting, sometimes they're standing. And the idea would be have a desk that can go up and down. Didn't Ron Owens have that at that old radio station that we used to be at? So it would go up and down. I think they did. I think
Front Street?
Yeah, the new studio had Eric. So this is nice because sometimes you feel like sitting, but really it's better if you stand at work and stand at your desk. So this up desk, so it's you know what? I'm going to tell you the price, and people are going to say that's ridiculous. But I priced other motorized standing desks, and they're thousands of dollars. So I was very pleased. This was $999, $1,000. And for the 6-foot version, the biggest one they make. And it came in a week. I had to set it up a little bit, but it wasn't as bad as IKEA. And now I don't do IKEA.
That's what I had.
I don't
like
do
you
IKEA.
Could move it up and down, but in my studio at home, I had the IKEA one that with the key.
Yeah, no, this has a motor in it.
Oh, that's
so
crazy.
So it goes up and down with a motor. It's kind of satisfying. Up and down. So I put my... And I think it holds a few hundred pounds. I don't know. I should probably find out. I wouldn't get on it and ride it around. That'd probably be a bad idea. But it's really cool.
It reminds me of young Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm raising him for the lightning day. I could maybe, if I ever want to build a monster, it's going to be double duty.
Put that on the bucket list.
I can recommend these. These are really nice. Up desk. Now, I don't know about the longevity because I've only raised it and lowered it about 100 times yesterday just for fun. But they do have crank ups, which are less expensive if you want to waste a little energy doing that. It's probably good for you. But this has a little motor. And I love it. So sometimes I'm standing up. In fact, I leave it in the stand-up position, and I figure, well, I'll lower it when I want to sit down. And I have my computer on it, my monitor, my inbox. Which is funny because I'm at home, so nobody's going to put anything in my inbox except this Restoration Hardware catalog. Can you listen to this?
Oh, my God.
That's how heavy it is.
Things go down.
Oh, my goodness. I think I've ruined my desk. So anyway, so now I've taken a picture of it. Isn't that that is a nice Paper Karma is the name of that. If you want to get it for iPhone or Android phone, it's free, and they will automatically. I guess they're just doing it to be nice people because there's no advertising or anything in it, and it will automatically unsubscribe you from stuff you no longer want to get. You just take a picture of it. I think that's cool. Our number 888-827-5536. You'll be talking to this lovely person, Heather. And she'll get you. She'll take notes. Write down your question. And then we'll get you on the show. 888-827-5536. Our website is tech. I'll let her go to work. Go ahead. I'll turn off your mic so you can answer calls. Our website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. You can go there if you want to have more information about any of the things that we talk about on the show. And I guess that's all you need to know. That's all the information you need to know. TechGuyLabs.com, 888-827-5536. Oh, I know what else. We'll be going to the phones in just a minute. A little later on today, our photo guy about an hour from now, hour and 15 minutes from now, our photo guy, Chris Marquardt. And he'll update us on the photo assignment and get and bust some myths. 8888 Ask Leo. We can also talk a little bit about my experiment with my mom. My experiment with my mom to make a private Facebook page. It's not going well. She texted me. Oh, that was another experiment. I gave her a smartphone for Mother's Day, and she's now texting me about 18 times a day. She texted me and said, I see all people I don't want to see. Who are these people? I said, don't worry, Mom, they can't see you. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms in the audience. We'll take some mom calls as well, and we'll talk about making a private Facebook page, the pros and the cons. Mother's Day edition of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo is our number. I have scanned. I scanned in that. Heather, you'll be proud of me. I scanned in this catalog. I said, it's Paper Karma. That is so. Everybody should download that app. You should get that.
I am.
I never asked you this. You know, we should have asked you in the job interview. Now I'm going to be nervous.
Big reveal.
What kind of phone?
Listen, you know I was a dope when you hired me.
You don't have a feature phone, do you?
No.
You do have a smartphone. It's an iPhone.
Just like every other girl.
Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. No,
well,
I like the
iPhone.
Mean,
but I've already been like, you know, the next time I go get a phone, I'm going to look at this HTC or this Nexus or this G4.
Well, I was just telling everybody what this Galaxy S4, which is now the... Okay. I know 2 weeks ago my favorite phone in the world was the HTC One. But I'm fickle. It's not me, it's you. No, it's them. So this time I'm carrying the Galaxy S4, which I actually really like quite a bit. But I found a feature this morning, thanks to the website, the Fandroid website. I found a feature that just blows me away. I've never seen this on a phone before. You put your headphones on, and then in the phone, and it's buried, so you would never find it. That's one problem with this phone. It has so many features, it's so complex. This Galaxy S4 is the newest flagship from Samsung, that you can't find any of this. But in sound... In the sound settings, way at the bottom, there's an adapt sound setting. And this is, remember the hearing test they would give you in school? Ooh, raise your left hand. Ooh, right. Yeah. You put your headphones on, and it does that. It goes through a bunch, like 20 or 30 sounds. It says, can you hear that? Can you hear that? And you say yes or no. And then it makes a curve. This is my curve. I'm deaf, basically. So not perfect sound, the sound that the phone comes from, is that nice straight yellow line right across the top. But this is my hearing. I don't come anywhere close to that, right?
Because
I'm an old man.
Lows?
Highs and lows, right?
Got it.
So the phone adapts now the sound when I'm listening on my headphones, and it sounds so... I can hear everything all of a sudden. Highs and lows. This would be great for older folks who have a hard time hearing voices, for instance, you know? But even for anybody, you know, young people obviously have great hearing. They're probably closer to that yellow bar. But I think that's a... I'd like to see more phones do that. Love to see more phones do that. That adjusts the sound, not based on some arbitrary curve. You know, the HTC One has Beats sound, which is great if you have Dr. Dre's hearing, but not so good for anybody else. But this customizes the curve for your hearing, and you can really tell the difference. So I would never have found that. Thanks to the folks at Fandroid. Just a little tip. All right. Who should I talk to first? I see we have a whole bunch of people on the line.
Yeah. I'd start at the top.
Right. Number one. Michael in Burbank, you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Michael, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome. Thank you, Heather.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hi. I'm calling you just to ask a couple of questions about website popularity. Me and a couple of my high school friends were starting up a website, and we want to add a sitemap, but we don't have a web hosting service. We're trying to find a free web hosting service because we want to minimize how much we spend. Websites to raise donations to pay for college.
It's a great idea. Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah.
Now, there are different services that are dedicated to funding things. What's it called? Fund My Life? I can't remember what it's called. But that you could go to GoFundMe. That's it. GoFundMe.com. And you can go there and say, hey, we want to raise money for college. And then what you... Now, obviously, strangers aren't going to give you money. But you might find that grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles, cousins, They might do it. So this there's a number of these. This is a very hot topic right now. Crowdfunding, they call it. And it's not exactly free. They take a percentage. That's how they fund themselves. But there are a number of places like this. So that's one way to do it, and that would be free up front, but they take a small cut, a few percentage points. You could read about that. And then you tell grandma and grandpa. But I do think that it makes sense to have your own website, and there's certainly lots of places you can create free websites. You probably already know because you're a young person about Tumblr, right?
Oh, yeah, no, but the thing is we already have our website. We're trying to add a sitemap to our website. It's been hosted already.
I see. So you're saying, because this is one of the things Google says, if you, for better search results, create a sitemap, which is just, a file, an HTML web page that has where everything is on your site. And then Google uses that to spider your site. I don't know how important that is, but I understand you want to make it.
Yeah,
so you're saying your free web host doesn't offer that as a feature.
No, it's not a free web host. I'm using GoDaddy.
Oh, ooh.
I have the XML file.
Terrible.
And I want to upload it to the directory, but I don't have a directory to upload it to.
For the sitemap. So I don't understand what you're asking me. You want somebody to replace GoDaddy?
Not exactly, no. With the service...
You want a separate website that will host your sitemap?
Yes, somehow, some way. Is there a way?
So you've generated an XML file?
Yeah, I generated an XML file. It has the sitemap and all the links pertaining to the sitemap.
That was done by GoDaddy?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's fine. You just host that on your site, sitemap.xml, and you go to Google and you say, here's our sitemap. Actually, if you look at Google's webmaster tools, there's a submit your sitemap link. You already have it. You don't need it. The sitemap is not necessarily something you want humans to visit. It's for Google's spider to visit. The thing that it goes, they call it a spider because it crawls the web. Get it? It goes around the web looking for websites, following links. And that's how Google has made this massive billion page index of everything there. So go to the Google's webmaster tools, google.com/webmaster. And you'll see a button that says submit your sitemap. Submit your sitemap. You're done. And you just store that XML file. Probably GoDaddy's already stored it for you. You just use the link that GoDaddy gave you for that XML file. And you could talk to GoDaddy's support. I'm sure Danica will answer the phone and just tell you everything you need to know. But that's fine. That's quite fine. That you don't need anything fancier to host it. And I don't even know if it would work if you took that XML file, put it on another place, and then told Google mine's there. It would confuse them. So don't do that. Patrick in San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
And actually, to be honest, it was my 22-month-old nephew who called you.
Don't say that, because there are people out there who have been trying for 4 years to get through, and they can't get through. They can't get through. And then you say, yeah, my 2-year-old just dialed and got through.
Well, that's the point is I was trying to redial so much that I figured I'd show him how to do it, and he went ahead and just repeated it for me.
That's smart. It's like you have a trained chimp, except it's
a
human. What's your 22-month-old's name?
That would be Noah Myers.
Hi, Mella?
Noah.
Nella. Nola. Noah.
Noah.
Gosh, I need to do this thing I did on the phone. I need to do that here, John. I need a hearing test. Noah. Everybody else knows it was Noah. What can I do for you, Patrick?
Well, because the Apple interface is so easy to use, I've been trying to get my whole family on board with Apple IDs.
Ah.
And we got a new iMac. And so, there's the music.
Hey, you're good. You must be listening to the show on a regular basis. Yes, that means I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll continue this right after this message. 8888-ASK-LEO. Telos Joe Talbot, who's in the... in the chat room, we have a great chat room. We have some very interesting people in there. Says, because Telos is the company that makes our soundboard and our phone equipment, everything we use is Telos. He said, I like the idea of a hearing test EQ setup for your Axia console. That's a great idea, Joe, because DJs are all deef. Us talk radio guys, we listen really loud in headphones. We're all kind of deef. That guy on the other station, Bill Handel down in L.A. on KFI. No, who is it? There's somebody who like has the worst headphone I've ever seen hanging off of his ear. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
And it's so loud, you can hear it when he's interviewing you across the room. You can hear it coming from the thing. It's not even a headphone. It's like a speaker he hangs from his ear.
And it's a national program?
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. I won't name names.
Right.
Won't name names. But see, so we should definitely, Joe Talbot, a feature request for this. The reason we use the Axia, which I'm totally in love with, and thank you, Telos, for that, is, oh, look, now I'm in the mirror and reflected, is because it's like a computer. It's IP-based, so it takes the sound and it turns it into digital packets that we can fly all over the place. So we can do anything we want with it. Anyway, let's get... I'm sorry. Easily distracted. Did I lose the guy I was talking to? Did I push the wrong button? I think I did. He's gone. Oh, rats. Oh, rats. Well, let's call back. Heather will be looking for you. JD in Los Angeles. Hi, JD. Leo LaPorte.
Hi,
Oh, that was the one where the 2-year-old was dialing again and again. Is he Noah? Back. Yeah. He's gone, isn't he? Get Noah to dial again. Oh, no. Anyway, JD, what can I do for you?
Hi, Leo. Well, I've got a pretty extensive Fios network here at the house.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Is it Fios, Verizon Fios, or you set up your own fiber optic?
No, it's Verizon. It's their new Mega Fios.
Mega Fios? What does that mean?
I don't know what they call it. They recently upgraded Fios. If you pay $10 more a month, you get a better quality Fios.
How fast does it go?
Oh, I don't know my numbers, Leo.
Fast. You know what?
Really fast.
If it's fast enough, you don't have to know it. You just go, it never slows down. It yeah, never slows it down. Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's a quality product. But I have a weird problem.
Yeah.
Well, we have our main CPU connected directly to the modem, so it's hardwired. Then we have a laptop and a second CPU, and every time we start up, it grabs our neighbor's unlocked network.
That's terrible. Okay. Verizon, the Fios modem is a Wi-Fi router as well as a modem?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the Wi-Fi that you would normally attach to.
Correct.
But your computers, unfortunately, see the other one. So, and his is unlocked, but yours is locked?
Correct.
And your computer is preferring the sexy unlocked Wi-Fi next door. The grass is always greener, isn't it?
Well, it's not bad for speed, but I have a pretty extensive home.
No, you're on Fios. You want to be on Fios. I mean, one thing would be nice as a neighbor to go next door and say, hey, could you just lock your Wi-Fi? They should anyway. They shouldn't have an open access point. That's risky for them.
I agree, but I have no idea who it is. I could go around the neighborhood.
You can put up flyers. To the person with the unlocked Wi-Fi, I see your network. I think it's auto-joining because at some point you joined it manually. You said yes. So I think you can go into your network settings and forget those access points. Say,
I believe I've tried that. What if that doesn't work?
I'm just looking here at my setup because I have Wi-Fi also. Now, you're on a Mac or a PC?
We're on a Mac.
Okay. Well, I'll go. That's good because I'm looking at a Mac here and the network preferences. And I see other Wi-Fis. And let's see if I can forget that Wi-Fi. I don't want to see it anymore. I don't like you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't look like I can, actually. Oh, wait a minute. I can subtract it. I can make the service inactive. I can manage. It seems like I should be able to just forget it. Is it under advanced? Let's see under advanced. Yeah. Remember networks this computer has joined. So in the network system preference pane, you'll see all the networks that you can see. And go and click the one that you don't want to join, the neighbor's sexy Wi-Fi. And click advanced, and under Wi-Fi, you'll see the names of the Wi-Fis, and you can unremember that you know? And then you'll also see, and this is probably even more useful, drag networks into the order you prefer.
Oh, yeah.
So then you could say, hey, I strongly prefer Fios. I am a Fios guy.
Fantastic.
I think that would fix it. So take it out of your preferred networks and say, hey, this is the order I prefer. You could do that on Apple's. On Windows, I believe the same kind of rough capability is there. You don't want to join the neighbor's Wi-Fi.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thanks, JD.
Thanks, Leo.
Nice to talk to you. Did we
Good
get
talking to you too.
Take care. Did we get Patrick? We didn't get Patrick back.
Oh, not yet.
Like said, Noah, Patrick, I'm so sorry. Do you remember what it was? Because he talked to you. What was it he wanted?
Right. So they have an iMac for like a week now, and they haven't been able to get the whole family their own Apple IDs. It like cut them off at 3.
Oh. Why would it cut you off at all? How would it even know? You need to have unique email addresses for each Apple ID. I think you know that. There's no limit to the number of Apple IDs you can have just as long as they have different email addresses. I don't... it's the credit card. They're using the same credit card. James is right. James in our chat room said you can only have 3 on the same credit card account. And that makes sense because, they want to limit how their liability. So I think that you need to get another credit card number. That's all. You know, one thing, and I highly recommend this. There used to be, and I think that's less common, but I know a couple of credit card companies will do this. You can generate, this is the best thing to do anyway, generate a one-time use credit card number. Maybe the chat room could tell me if their credit card does this. American Express, I think, does. You could generate a one-time only or one-use only credit card. So you can say, this credit card is only good at Amazon. This credit card is only good at Apple. It's a virtual credit card number. If you can do that with one of your credit cards, then you're golden. Just generate a couple. PayPal will do that. Discover does it. Chat room's telling me. Plasmid Vectors, thank you. Citibank can do that. So there's a few. Maybe you're lucky enough you have one of those. Did you get him back?
He is back. Oh, my God. It worked.
It's amazing. Thank you, Noah. Noah, you're so good. Did Noah dial again, Patrick?
He's over eating a little bit of lunch, so I had to do this one myself.
Wow. I'm so sorry we hung up on you. I say we because I mean me. It's the royal.
You said it was a little loud, so I grabbed my headphones and I accidentally pressed the middle.
Oh.
So it hung up.
So you hung up.
I'm so sorry, Leo.
No, don't apologize. I'm really glad you got back. And now everybody who's been trying for 4 years to do it is just kicking themselves because Patrick got it twice in one day. And guess what? Listen. See, hear that?
I'll try not to hang up.
Don't hang up. We'll be back right after this. I can't believe it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can't believe it. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. You don't want to, trust me, make a trip to the post office, a pilgrimage to the post office. And why should you when you can print your own postage from your computer and your printer whenever you need it from Stamps.com? I'm not talking a postage meter. Now, don't get confused. Postage meters are expensive. You have to lease them. You have to pay for special ink. You know, it's really sad. I see people waiting in line at the post office to charge up their postage meter. That's crazy when you could just do it all from Stamps.com. Postage on demand. This is, if you're doing a lot of mailing, you don't need this for your Christmas card list. This is not for home use. This is for a business that does a lot of mailing, fulfillment, that kind of thing. Stamps.com, we use it. It's incredible. You could print, you can actually use the Avery stamps labels, I guess they make them, and print stamps right on them. Whenever I need stamps, I don't go to the post office. I go to Frederique and say, print me out a page of stamps, and she does, right from the printer. I think that's awesome. You could print right on envelopes, which is very business, professional, because it prints the return address, prints the address of the recipient, which you can get from QuickBooks, from your address book, from, Etsy, PayPal, any website. Puts that all in there, puts the postage, puts your logo if you want, a special message, Mother's Day deal, whatever, on the envelope. But you can print for any class of mail. You can print mailing labels for packages. And, of course, they have that scale. In fact, they have several scales that are USB. They plug into the computer, and then you don't even have to – you always have exactly the right postage. No more postage due. That's so embarrassing, so unprofessional. I want you to give it a try. Postage on demand from Stamps.com. Now, when you – go there. We've got a no-risk trial. you might say, oh, that $80 value, that looks good. But no, do me a favor. When it says up in the right, it says heard about us on our radio or podcast, click that button and type in our offer code, TECH, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y, two words. And that $80 value, whoa, turns into $110 bonus value. $55 in free postage for the first few months of your Stamps.com account. A free digital scale, a $5 supply kit, a four-week trial. It is great. The scale is yours forever. You do pay shipping and handling on the scale. I think it's like $5. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Even get discounts you can't get at the post office. And the mailman comes and gets it. I like that too. Stamps.com. Give it a try today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like Nathan, I'm liking the tunes. Nathan's spinning the discs, our musical director, our new musical director. I give you the title now, Nathan.
Thank you, sir.
8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Patrick is on the line here, and we're talking to Patrick. He has you've got how many Macs now?
Well, we're going to try and go to multiple Macs. So
but it's just one Mac right now. Okay,
one Mac right now.
But you want a different iCloud account for each user?
Yes, correct.
And they all have their own unique logins, right?
Correct.
Right. And so am I correct? Okay. I feel like Karnak. Am I correct in thinking that the problem is that you can only get three accounts on a credit card number?
And we haven't even used a credit card number, though, because really all I want to do is use it for our calendars as our main function. We want to share our calendars between each other.
Got it. And what does it say? It says you can't create another account?
Right, so we did the user. I had a great help from a friend, Steve Balinski, over at Cal State San Bernardino. We go to school together, so I brought him over as a second set of eyes while we did this process. And we did. We created the user accounts on the iMac. Then we went and we created Gmail accounts for the family.
Great.
Then we made everybody an Apple ID based on those Gmail accounts.
Great.
And then we went into each user account on the iMac and tried to connect the Apple ID.
Oh, it says you can only have three different calendars attached.
Or three different, yeah. Well, it says, yeah, your maximum accounts reached. I forget the exact error message, but it wouldn't let me do more than three different, hook up more than three different Apple IDs. But even though they're separate user accounts.
Yeah, that's more a limitation of the operating system in saying, hey, you can't start piping all this stuff in here. Use Google Calendar and their sharing capability. Don't even do it through Apple.
Because either Apple has the push feature, and when I go
to push. It'll push. So what you do is, you are in your, let's say you are in your calendar and you want five other people's calendars in your calendar. You have them share their calendar with you at the Google level. Now that shared calendar becomes part of your calendar and you don't have to do anything with a Mac. It just comes in.
Well, now see, I understand you on that aspect of it, but when I'm trying to, you know, so my the fourth person in the family goes into their Apple and they go, okay, I'm going to go into my calendar and hook up my...
No, they don't have to. You're getting it wrong. Don't do it through Apple at all.
At all.
At all. No Apple. Just Google. So what you do is go to the web, calendar.google.com.
Okay.
And you say, share this calendar with, and use the other person's Gmail address, as many as you need. Share that calendar, and Google does not limit you. You can share your calendar with hundreds of people. Share my calendar with these four other people. On their calendar, when they log into their Google calendar, calendar.google.com, they'll see your shared calendar as well. It'll be just another category. You'll say Patrick's calendar.
Right.
Now, when you sync up on the Mac, you just sync up with your Google calendar.
Correct.
And you look at the calendars on there, and one of the calendars will be Patrick's calendar. You check that box and say, yeah, I want to see that one. You can have as many of those because it's just another calendar category from the point of view of the Mac.
Right, so yeah, sharing the calendars between us hasn't been the problem, but when the fourth person goes into their brand new user account on the iMac, they can't hook up anything to the actual iCal program, even if it's just the Gmail.
Well, that's not right.
It doesn't seem right, does it?
I'm understanding now this, but this makes no sense at all. So the computer is saying, I don't care how many user accounts you have.
You can only hook up three. You can only go in here and hook up three different, you know, unique. I guess maybe I just need to go and not, instead of using Apple IDs, maybe try it solely with the Gmail. But I was hoping to stay within the operating system.
No, you are. You're fine. Apple. If you look in the Apple calendar as well as the address book program,
mm-hmm.
It will say, do you want to sync to a Google account, calendars and address books? Do.
All right.
Apple limits the number of iCloud accounts assigned per device, and I guess a computer is a device, to three.
Why?
That's crazy. Three unique Apple IDs from a single IP within a 24-hour period only. You might try tomorrow. People on the chat room, Packetier and James, thank you, are looking this up on Apple. It's a very bizarre thing. I don't understand that at all.
It is a little crazy. So, Leo, how soon does the video go up of our call so where I can maybe write back to you and let you know how I'm progressing?
It goes up within 24 hours. So, yeah, do go back to techguylabs.com tomorrow. And Josh will have put the video up of this show and your call. It'll be there, right there. It'll say, Patrick, with an iMac question. And then you can add in a comment and let us know. And if you're listening and you say, boy, this doesn't sound right, or if you've got a way around it, I'll have to actually go through and do it. That seems like an arbitrary and strange limitation that Apple says, okay, you've got one computer, one IP address, and I'm not going to let you attach that to more than, because this is a family computer. I'm not going to let you attach it to more than three iCloud accounts. I have to say, this is where Apple just stumbles miserably, is in web services. You know, MobileMe was a disaster. Famously, Steve Jobs called the MobileMe team into the company auditorium at One Infinite Loop and said, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You've let us down. You've let your coworkers down. MobileMe is a disaster, and then fired them all. Or not all of them, but most of them. And started over with iCloud. If Steve were here, I have a feeling there'd be another meeting because it just has so many problems. Apple needs to go out and hire some network engineers. I know they're doing it as fast as they can and figure this out because they've really not got services down. Google's got it down. That's why I say use Google. Google knows what they're doing. I'm not familiar with this issue because I don't have a case where I have more than one iCloud account attached to one computer. Yeah, he didn't fire everybody. He fired the guy in charge. It's a better story if you say you're all fired. I like to embellish. He fired the VP and the rest of the engineering teams got to their feet and cheered. How about that? It doesn't make sense because you should, if you're going to allow any arbitrary number of user accounts on your computer, which you do, you should be able to have each of them have their unique and one and only iCloud account. I don't understand why there would be a limitation, except if Apple's afraid that some one person will create 100 iCloud accounts, but three seems an awfully low number. And if you have a different login okay, now Emmerich is saying, hey, I have six iCloud accounts on my MacBook Pro. So I don't know what's going on here. Emmerich, did you set them up at separate days? You know, instead of in one 24-hour period, maybe that's just the limitation. I don't know. But Patrick's going to get back and put this on the website, techguylabs.com. So tune back tomorrow on the website. That's one of the things I really have high hopes on the website. We designed it so that it would be a repository of all the stuff we talk about. But I understand that I'm not going to always know everything. I certainly don't know everything. And that maybe after the fact, somebody might come in and say, hey, I tried this and this worked. And I want that information to be on the site too. So the way we set this up is, during the show, James DeRuvo is writing stuff down so that we have at least something there. You can go back, you get home from driving around doing your chores or taking mom out to brunch, and you heard the show and you go home and you can immediately see something on the site, techguylabs.com. There's a entry for today's show already. Thank you, James. But then after that, Josh Windisch on my staff here goes through them all, adds to it, fleshes it out, and attaches video and audio so that you can see that it jumps right to that portion of the show, and you could see it, and you could see the question, you could see the answer. And then, in the comments, please add your thoughts. The more you do that, the better. Because this should be a way to solve this. There should be a way. I can't believe that this is really just not possible. And I do, frankly, always use Google. I don't use iCloud. I mean, in fact, I wish iCloud... I get some problems because iCloud sometimes somehow gets turned on and it's syncing in addition on my calendar. I just want to use Google's calendar and let Apple pull from Google Calendar and put that in my calendar. I don't even use Apple's iCal program, or I guess they just call it calendar now. I use a better calendar, in my opinion, called BusyCal. It's in the App Store. You can download it. It's a paid calendar, has lots of features, and it's better for using with Google Calendar. But it works with iCloud as well. And I wish it would be easier to do all this. But Apple, you know, this is the problem. And kind of the different philosophies. Apple wants things to be easy, so they're going to be there's one way to do it, because that's easier. And we'll tell you the best way, we'll do it, and you can do it that way, and any other way, no. Whereas Windows and Android on the mobile side, anything you want, whatever you want, go for it. And as a result, you get a much more complicated, confusing operating system. And then I guess you have to choose which one fits your personality. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. This is the Tech Guy Show. Yes, your worst nightmare, a geek with his own radio show. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number to call a geek. Or you can really geek out and join us in the chat room. Yeah, with a thousand other crazy people, crazy geeks. You'll find that at our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And we love having you there and having you on the air. And I'm going to go to Heather. I warn her. I make a hand gesture. Okay. That's that hey, means I'm about up. To go with you. Go to you. Turn on your microphone. Heather, do we have another caller?
We do. I'm liking this to kick things off the hour for Mother's Day. Frank in Huntington Beach. About photos and negatives and keepsakes and things
Aww,
like that.
Oh, isn't that nice? Let's go to Frank in Huntington Beach right now. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Frank.
Hey, aloha, Leo.
Aloha and happy Mother's Day.
Hey, same.
What can I do for you?
Well, we did some spring cleaning. Mm-mm. And we were cleaning out our garage, and we came across a number of our parents' photo albums.
Oh, neat.
Some old slides that I had taken many, wonderful. Many years ago, and even some negatives. And so we're looking at all of these photos and other media, and we said, you know, wouldn't it be neat to put this on some kind of digital format where we could kind of see it all in one place rather than have, you know, all these different formats. So my call is to ask you what your recommendations would be to either use a service or buy something to do it in-house. And
you could do – I mean, the less expensive way to do it is to do it in-house. However – I think your time is worth something. You know, you can buy a scanner and all the equipment. And sometimes if you want to do it fast, sometimes people buy an easel, a tripod, some lights, and use their camera to take pictures. Because actually, if you have a high-quality digital camera, you can take a picture of the picture that's going to be almost as good, if not as good, as a scanner. And it's certainly a lot faster. So the fastest way to do it, do you have a good digital camera?
Yeah, I have an NEX-5.
Oh, yeah, that's excellent. Oh, that's nice. So you'll want the right lens to get a nice close-up, full-frame shot of it. You'll want an easel and a tripod because you want to make sure that there's no parallax, right, that they're exactly parallel to the lens of the camera and the image. You want some lights from the side to light it. And then it's very easy. You take a picture out, put it on the easel, snap. Picture out, put it on the easel, snap. That's the fastest way to do it.
What about some of the really old pictures, like from the early 1900s, from my grandparents, et cetera, from Hawaii? And the pictures are kind of, you know, that got that patina.
Yeah, so that's then a Photoshop job, right? You can go in there and you could still take the pictures. By the way, this is not what I'm going to recommend, but I'm telling you the do-it-yourself method. And then you Photoshop it and you can clean up stuff and so forth.
This would be my next career for the next year.
Well, that's the problem. If there's thousands of them, good luck. So we had similar situation. My mom in her attic, I had many years ago taken all of the family slides because for some reason my family decided to take slides. Mm-hmm. Not in slides is even more difficult. You can't just put them on an easel. You've got to scan them. You know, it's tough.
Right.
So we had thousands of slides and I had put them in Kodak carousels. We had 20 Kodak carousels in the attic. And now, first of all, we used to have slideshows. We'd set up the projector, set up the screen. Right. Remember this? And then they'd go, really, and 4 hours later, the entire family is demoralized and dejected. Yes. Why?
You did it because there used to be a service, a company called RGB, where you used to buy the film and send it to them, and they make you like a slide and a photo, and it costs virtually nothing. You remember that?
Yeah, but all of those people are out of business now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Kodak's Chapter 11, folks. It's not good. So if you have a mixture of slides and prints, you have prints that are not in great condition, slides that might be dirty, you can, if you really care, you can go through it. You can buy the right equipment. You can clean it up. I recommend that you use a service. We used a service. Okay. You know, the slides were in Rhode Island, and my sister, who is an artist and worked at Rhode Island School of Design, found a really great company, and they scanned it, and it was very nice. But the one I recommend nationwide is called Scan Cafe.
Okay.
And they will take videos, film, you know, Super 8 film, slides. They'll take pretty much any format. The best deal is they have a box that you throw as much as you can stuff into one box and you throw it to them. But you can also do it. And it's about, I can't remember it. I think it's like 20 cents, maybe less, 15 cents an image. It is worth doing this because if you do this, you're going to have it digital. They clean it up. They'll make it nice. And then it's permanent. And everybody in the family can have a copy. Once my sister did this, we got CDs for everybody in the family. And so everybody has a copy. There's no chance they're going to get lost anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we
use the service, and then we get it, and we selectively find a couple of photos we'd like to enhance even more. Would they be able to do that also?
Yeah, or you could if you have Photoshop Elements or Photoshop. It's very easy to play with these because now they're high quality digital files, right? When they scan a paper photo, they scan it 600 DPI, 600 dots per inch.
Oh, excellent!
That's as good as the original. And they do some cleanup. You can pay for more cleanup if you want, it's very easy using Photoshop Elements, the $99 program that Adobe offers. They have a heal tool that will get rid of lines and hairs and cracks. You can colorize. What's one thing that's really fun is to take a black and white image and subtly colorize it. And there's guides online. You'll make an extra layer in Photoshop, and you do a translucent, very kind of pastel colorization, and it looks gorgeous. And it's a wonderful gift, if your folks are still alive, to get the wedding photo, take the black and white wedding photo, subtly, beautifully colorize it.
Yeah, unfortunately, my parents are passed away, but we're going to Hawaii in July, and I want to visit with my aunties and uncles, and I wanted to take some photos for them to see.
They'll be so thrilled. They'll be thrilled. This is a well worth it. Scan Cafe is a very good national service. There are local companies. In fact, every town has somebody that does this. But this is the one, since it's a national show. They really are a good company. They do a great job. They have drop-off. You're in Huntington Beach. Yeah, they have. Their facility is in the San Francisco Bay Area, so it wouldn't be good for you. But there are companies in the L.A. area that do that. And they do have drop-off if you're in the North Bay Area. Northern California area. But otherwise, they will give you a box, and you just ship it off to them.
All right, excellent. Thank you for your recommendation.
Oh, I think that's good, a wonderful, always, wonderful thing to do. My pleasure. Aloha. Mahalo for listening. I appreciate it, Frank. What a great idea to do that. And, if you have a small number, 100, 200, you could do it yourself and really take the care. I do recommend, before you go to Scan Cafe, you prune through this stuff, because there's going to be a lot of things you don't want to spend 22 cents on. You know, it adds up. If you can get it down. I'd already culled the slides and put them in this carousel. So I knew that I had gone through them and gotten rid of stuff I didn't want. But I was so grateful. And the next thing I did is I put them online so that I can then, the immediate family members got CDs, my mom, my sister, my dad. But I put them all online as well so that I can refer some. They're private. They're password protected. But I can refer somebody to the online site, and you can use Flickr. I use SmugMug. There are lots of sites that you can do this. And I can say, hey, if you want them and you want to get prints, they're all online. This is a very nice project. Highly recommended. Scan Cafe, apparently, according to Tokyo Jim, will let you, after the fact, say, hey, I don't want to. These are junk. So they said you can throw away as much as 30%. I like that. I don't want to pay for that. It was terrible. Actually, now it's 20%. I'm looking at here. With Scan Cafe, you'll review your photo scans before you settle your bill. You can delete 20% of them, no questions asked. So 1 in 5 you could throw out. That's a pretty good deal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by our phone system. Literally, quite literally. But the phone system we use for the office is RingCentral. And I want to tell you a little bit about RingCentral because it's a great place to go. If you are a business, you're setting up an office, maybe you're setting up multiple offices, all the more reason to use the number one cloud-based phone system in the world, RingCentral.com. Really great for offices in multiple locations. Great for a growing business like ours. There's no PBX in the basement, no lease. There's no setup fee at all. It's completely cloud-based. So that means I just plug in a phone. When a new employee comes in, we give them a desk and a phone, plug it in, and they're good to go. Easy to add them to the phone tree. You can do that all from the web. They have a new feature now. If you use Salesforce CRM, oh, this is so sweet. The sales team will love this. You can integrate all your phone calls into your CRM seamlessly. While you're on the phone, you can create a new record for contacts and leads, take call notes in real time on the call, and it's all built into RingCentral. This is cool. They have RingCentral conferencing now. They have business SMS. See, the advantage of having a software-based system is it's infinitely expandable, and they've done so many great things. You can have the RingCentral app on your smartphone. It means my employees can call using their smartphone, but we pay the freight because it comes from our 800 number. Because they're using the app. They can even do texting that way. So the text comes from our business number. Incoming texts to our business number are routed to our employees. So is their voicemail automatically sent to their email, the faxes. So many features. I want you to try this free for 30 days. Now that's nice. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Really, and I know this is, you know, this is kind of a specialized product for anybody who's setting up an office or a virtual office, you know, your house and it wants flash. Your house and somebody else's house could be one office. RingCentral.com, offer code Twitter, call 800-543-9980. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, that's the number if you have a question, comment, suggestion. Coming up in few minutes, 33 and a third after the hour, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, to talk about fotografia. Mark in Scottsdale, our next caller. Hey, actually, wait a minute. Was I done? I think I was done. Yeah. Hey, Mark, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice weather here.
Oh, don't tell me. Well, let's see. You're Scotts Valley. So that's the Santa Cruz area.
Yeah.
You get the morning, you know, sea fog, but then it clears up, the sun shines, and it's a beautiful Mother's Day.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Scotts Valley is where Borland was, right?
Right.
That's an old name from the history of technology. Philippe Kahn's Borland International. Also, a number of hard drive companies are down there. What can I do for you?
Well, I just wanted your take on Adobe's decision to nix its boxed software and go with a subscription-based service.
You know, they were getting a lot of heat because they were charging $1,400 more in Australia for boxed software. And the answer to that was, well, just get the Creative Cloud. Just get the Creative Cloud. And I think it was starting to become obvious that Adobe really didn't want to sell software, that they wanted to sell subscriptions. They're not alone. Microsoft wants to do the same thing. Everybody wants to do the same thing. A subscription is an annuity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can even estimate how much you're going to make and all of that.
But they give you a Microsoft gives you a choice.
You can still buy boxed Windows, but I don't know for how much longer. Adobe, so they've announced that they're no longer going to sell the software, huh?
Yep.
Wow. Well, I guess their attitude is, you know, hey, it's $50 a month. That's cheaper than buying a $1,200 professional package.
But I use Photoshop only, and I've been using it for maybe 15 years. I bought the full version once and have upgraded every other version since then, and I estimate that I've spent maybe $1,200, maybe $1,500 tops on Adobe software in 15 years.
Yeah. Well, you'll spend more than that from now on, and that's why they did it.
Like quadruple.
Yeah, they're for a single app, $20 a month, $240 a year.
Right.
So I would buy the last version of Photoshop that you can get, I think CS6,
mm-hmm.
and stop.
That's what I'm doing.
And if enough people do that, then Adobe will change your mind. But until then, you're stuck. Now, the good news is there are more and more. There are certainly on the Mac side, there are alternatives to Photoshop. Right. There's Acorn is getting better and better. I like Pixelmator. Both are much cheaper. Are you on Windows?
I'm on both.
Both, yeah. So I think that's also an opportunity on both Windows and Macintosh for companies to come along and say, okay, we think there's still a market for a boxed piece of software at a fixed mm-hmm. price.
Yeah.
So you just have to hope the market pays attention, because that's about the choice. There is a student and teacher plan, which I think is great for the Creative Cloud. That's $20 a month, but still for a lot of students and teachers, that's too much.
Right.
It's a shame. It's nice that there's nothing nice about it. It's it's nice that there's competition, I guess.
I think it's a perfect example of what happens when there's a monopoly.
Right. Because then they could charge whatever they charge. Now, there isn't really a monopoly. There's a psychological monopoly, because once you're a Photoshop user, I use Lightroom and Photoshop. I understand you want to use those. I never was seduced by the Creative Suite because it was more than I need, although we do buy it for work. I have two copies,
right?
Two subscriptions, because our editors love to use all those other tools. But I just, you're right. I probably will not buy a subscription. I haven't yet. And I am going to look at alternatives, and I think that's the good news is somebody else can do a better job. Adobe really does. Photoshop really is the king. There is, there's the open source, the GIMP, the GNU image manipulation program. It's not quite Photoshop, although there is a nice little layer you can put on top that makes it look like Photoshop, and that's free, Windows and Mac. But I think Photoshop users are going to say, yeah, but it ain't Photoshop. My fingers know the keys.
Well, if you're a pro, you basically are stuck using Photoshop.
I think so. I think that's true. And I think the rationale Adobe says, hey, you're a pro. You're making money on this. You shouldn't mind $20 a month.
Yeah, but you shouldn't mind being, like, with a gun pointed to your head.
I know. And, I think it has to do with two things. One is, steady revenue, known revenue. And the other is to stop piracy, right? Because if you sell a disc, then it can be pirated. If you have a subscription, you could just say, hey, it's not going to work unless you give me the $20.
Well, I don't think that's the case, because when you with this Creative Cloud application, you actually download the application and it's on your PC.
Right, but
so
it won't work.
Crack it.
Well, I guess that's what it'll have. And you know what? Give pirates some credit. They'll crack it, won't they?
Yeah.
They'll make it somehow. They'll set up a fake authentication server, or just take the authentication code out entirely, and I bet you already there's BitTorrent out there. And so really, it's foolish for Adobe to try to force the end of piracy. I think Adobe should acknowledge piracy exists. I know they lose money to piracy, but it's also, I think, for almost all the people who use Photoshop that I know, used pirated versions first, said, this is good, I need it, and bought it.
Yeah.
I think that's very common.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. It's, I agree with you, Mark. It's a shame that it's a shame.
There's a petition on change.org right now it's in a few days, there's thousands of signatures. So, and if you read the comments on Adobe's Facebook page, it's basically 99% negative.
Yeah, but
people are really angry.
The market rules, not the petition. The market rules.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
so the petition is just a way of customers saying we're angry, but Adobe's not going to pay any attention to that. They're going to look at revenue.
Yeah.
That's all they have to look at. And
right.
if really truly people hate this, they'll have to back down because nobody will buy it.
Right. It's kind of like what happened with Netflix, right?
Yeah. There's a good example. Netflix almost doubled its cost last year by saying we're going to separate streaming from discs. Although in the long run, Netflix won because a lot of people switched to streaming and they've been making a lot of money ever since.
Yeah.
I am absolutely with you, Mark. I completely understand. Companies do stupid things all the time, and you just have to hope that the market response will convince them this was a bad idea. I don't have high hopes for that, because I think Adobe. I think you're right. I think Adobe has the professionals where they want them. Because first of all, if I'm a graphic designer working in a company, I'm not paying for it anyway. I just tell the boss, yeah, the boss probably likes it. Oh, it's only $20 a month now? Oh, that's great. It's a lot easier to get the boss to pay for even a $60 a month subscription than it is, hey, boss, can you fork over a couple of grand for the creative suite every 2 years? So my suspicion is that they've already checked with the market, and they're pretty convinced that the market is going to prefer this. Businesses like subscription plans. That's why Microsoft does it. In our chat room, UOS DWiz says, bosses don't have calculators? No. No. They have spreadsheets. It's a whole different thing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk photography. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is here. And then we'll get to Mike in L.A., who likes the comments section but says, I can't see it. Well, we'll help you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Joining me now, our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, all the way from Germany. Are you in Tübingen or Darmstadt? Where are you?
I'm in Hanover.
Hanover. And
I'm not sure if you can get video from me right now. There seems to be an issue on the line, but...
You know what? Guess what, Chris? It's a radio show.
That's right. I remember.
Doesn't matter. If people just use their imagination, they can pretend they see you. So what do you want to talk about
today? Find my avatar somewhere online.
Just
you know,
imagine.
You know, I've come back to bust a myth. And last time when I shot someone with a camera, obviously, in a darker setting and I didn't use the flash, I got the remark, your flash didn't fire. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things that
they blink? What happened?
No, either people are old school or their camera kind of automatically pops up the flash. The myth is you need a flash to shoot in the dark, but that is not necessarily the case.
Oh, I see. So you don't want a flash. And they say, well, how could you get a picture? I'm in the dark here.
Exactly. And often that is, it is kind of still, the myth is still around that you need a flash to shoot in the dark. But, yeah. Well, let's try to understand first why that is. Because, there's this balance between how much light you have and how short you can expose a picture. And in general, you want a short shutter speed to avoid camera shake.
Yeah.
And photography used to require a lot of light. If we go back to the beginning, the film wasn't very sensitive. You had like 5 minutes to take one picture. You needed to expose very long and sit still for 5 minutes. And over time, the sensitivity of film has improved. Then digital cameras came along, and that has improved things even more. So now we're talking about sensitivities which are measured in ISO of, I don't even know, 3,200, 6,400, 12,800. Back in the good old days, it was, or maybe not so good old days, it was ISO 12 or ISO 25 or 50.
Actually, I'm curious about this, because I used to buy like Tri-X film, Kodak's black and white film.
That's an ISO 400 film.
It was called ASA 400 in the U.S. Is that the same as ISO?
It's the same, yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty much the same. So film is now, or digital cameras are now like 1,000 times as sensitive as film used to be. There's a lot of change.
When I set my camera to 32,000 ISO, and I do have that
yes, you do.
I do have that capability. What am I going to give up?
Well, you will in general get a bit more noise in the pictures. That's kind of like, you know, in the old days when you used film that was very sensitive and you had a lot of grain. That is pretty much the same. The picture gets a bit more gritty, like a TV set that's not tuned to the right station.
Right.
Oh, most people don't even know that anymore.
Right.
So so that is one of the things you give up. But interestingly enough, with today's cameras, we not only have very high sensitivity, we also have lenses around that are what we call brighter. They let more light in. And that is measured by what's called the aperture. There's an aperture number on your lenses. And if you have an aperture number, smaller is better in that case. Let's say you have an aperture 1.8. That is much better than 5.6. That's much more light in. And if you combine that with higher ISOs, you can pretty much shoot in virtually no light, pretty much almost in darkness, like around a Christmas tree or at a dinner with very little light, or similar situation. So the combination of a lens that has that lets lots of light in and the high sensitivity of today's cameras will allow you to shoot at very, very good shutter speeds in very, very low light.
I don't like flash anyway. Whenever I use flash, yeah. I always regret it.
You know,
like if you take a good example, Christmas tree. What's the point of taking a Christmas tree picture with a flash?
You don't
even see the lights. It's all brightly illuminated.
And it's so nice because the light doesn't come from where the camera is. If you have a camera with the flash built in, just do the experiment at home. Switch off the light, put a flashlight in front of your forehead and shine it into someone's face. That is pretty much the same light that you get when you shoot.
Not a good experience.
Someone when you shoot a picture of someone with a flash on the camera. It's the straight on light that looks ugly most of the time.
I like the idea of if you're doing a Christmas tree, getting a tripod or putting the camera on a fixed surface and doing a 3 or 4 second exposure.
Absolutely. You get very, very interesting things, including the background behind the Christmas tree being nicely lit, because now you have a longer exposure and everything comes together. You will also be able to do interesting motion blur effects if you want to do that. But in general, if the light source is not straight on the camera, if it's the light sources that are just there in the room, you will end up with much more natural looking pictures. And today with today's cameras, you can do that. And then if someone tells you your flash didn't fire, you can say, yep, that's on purpose.
Now, I have to say a lot of times on a camera phone, the low light performance is so poor that you might end up using the even poorer flash that's built into the camera phone. But I have to say, I have one camera phone, the new HTC One, and the Lumia 920 is another good example, that do pretty good low-light photography. They have built-in optical image stabilization. They have a wider aperture. They're, for the most part, f2. And the HTC One has 4 megapixels. It's 2 microns per pixel, so they're more light-sensitive. So all in all, I can get pretty good low-light pictures on my
They're getting better and better, especially as the electronics get better and as they do whatever magic. I mean, some of them do what's called pixel binning, so they put more than one pixel together and kind of group them into little groups of 4 or something to kind of even out the noise there. So they're getting better. But even if I shoot with my iPhone, I still have a 4S, and I shoot in low light, I try to just switch on more lights in the room to get this non-frontal light, to get light from natural light sources in the room, right, as opposed to the flash on the phone.
Right. Some good tips. Now, Chris, we have an assignment going.
Oh, yes.
We want to encourage people to take pictures. What is the assignment?
The assignment is bubble.
Bubble.
As simple as that. It's bubble. And it's going to be reviewed early June. For one reason, because I will be gone for the next couple of weeks.
Good. So you have 2 weeks to take pictures of bubble, of whatever that means to you, by the way. I'm not going to tell you take pictures of bubbles. I'm saying the word is bubble. Do what you think best. But if you do get a good picture that represents the idea, the concept, the image bubble, I want you to upload it to Flickr. Now, you don't have to have an account. You can create a free one. If you're a Yahoo member, you've got an account at Flickr, at flickr.com. Upload your picture. Tag it, if you will, with the word bubble when you upload it. Flickr has that capability. And then if you're not already a member of the Tech Guy group, join our Tech Guy group, because it's just great. And once a week, you can add another bubble picture submitted for Chris's consideration. And in a couple of weeks, Chris will come back and we'll look at 3 bubble images. Another great bit for radio. Digital photography on the radio.
Who needs the visuals if we can play cinema of the mind, you know?
Yeah, these pictures all look so much better than they really do. If you just imagine how good they are. Chris, what are you doing for the next 2 weeks?
I'll be on vacation in Ireland. Shooting large format pictures in Ireland.
See, when you go on vacation, you don't leave your camera behind. It's not really a vacation. No, it's a busman's holiday. So you're taking your medium, your large format? How big is that?
It's a 4x5. It's not as big, actually. It's a foldable. It folds nicely. And I just when I shoot for myself, that is my meditation. You know, that's my...
Yeah, because you can take like one picture every 5 minutes.
Sort of, yeah. I will probably end up shooting less than 10 pictures a day, and I'll be really happy doing
it. Now, is it film or digital?
It's film. It's actually, I'm shooting Tri-X, the film you just mentioned earlier. I'm shooting Tri-X on that.
I always love Tri-X. It's a beautiful, it's black and white. It's a little grainy, but because it was, in those days, 400 was really fast.
Well, I develop it myself. I know how to develop it, so it's virtually grain-free. It's
easy to develop, too, yeah. Hey, Chris, have a great vacation in Ireland. I look forward to seeing your black and white large format images.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Me and Heather on Mother's Day. What do you have? What do you have for me here?
Oh, Mike in LA. We were doing right.
Oh, we were still on. Oh, I feel terrible. I feel terrible. Yes. Hi, Mike. We didn't pick him up yet, though. That's right. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Hey, Leo.
Hey,
I'm so
Mike.
Happy to be on. I'm representing probably all the non-techies that are fans of your show.
All three of you.
Well, I love your show. You're part of my weekend routine.
Thank you.
I get up and I drink my coffee and I listen to Leo Laporte.
Aren't you great, Mike? So you're not, but you must be a little bit of a you must use technology.
Well, I use the computer, but probably like a lot of people, the only thing I really do with it is surf the internet.
Right.
And the one thing that I enjoy is reading Yahoo News every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I like reading the comments at the bottom of the stories. I like reading what people have to say. A lot of times they're really funny. And for some reason, on my home computer, I cannot anymore load the comments. They used to just pop up automatically. I can still get them at work, but I can't get them at home. And I've tried Firefox, Internet Explorer, and Google Chrome. And I just get this little gray daisy wheel that spins around at the bottom of each story.
So they're using, and I'm just looking at the comments right now on Yahoo News, and it looks they look pretty normal to me. But I would guess that they are either using JavaScript or perhaps something weirder like Flash for the comments. What browser are you using?
Right now I'm using Google Chrome, and I tried, a friend of mine said, try updating your Flash, and I tried to do that, and it said your Chrome browser is already using latest form of Flash.
Chrome comes, and this is one of the real advantages of Chrome, is it comes with Flash built in. So, and it's automatically updating without even your thinking, and that makes it more secure. Flash is also sandboxed. Frankly, it's one of the strong reasons to use Chrome is that Flash is no longer a security issue on Chrome as it is on other browsers. So it's not Flash. In fact, it looks like it's just plain old JavaScript. Do you have a security program on there, perhaps, or something like NoScript running?
You know, I have, I think, some security programs. I probably have a bunch of ones that are conflicting with each other.
Well, they're probably blocking the use of JavaScript. You could also check the browser settings and make sure JavaScript is enabled. I don't think Yahoo does use Java for Yahoo games, but you'd be crazy to use Java. By the way, there's a they're not related despite the similarity in the names. JavaScript is not Java. Java is a very insecure programming language that is used for things like Yahoo games, but not, to my knowledge, for the comments. And in fact, as I examine this, it's not. It's JavaScript.
Okay.
So JavaScript is a very widely used technology on the web. It can be a problem, and so some people and some security programs block it. Sometimes people use a program called NoScript that lets you enable JavaScript only on pages you know are safe. But what you'll find if you turn off JavaScript is that most pages start getting weird.
See, that's the weird thing is I can read the comments on every other website, just not Yahoo.
Well, if you look at my website, techguylabs.com, we use JavaScript for our comments as well. We use a third-party commenting system called Discuss. If you can read the comments there, then that's not the issue either. It sounds like there's something going on with your security. I'd try disabling your security and seeing if that fixes it. If it doesn't, then I'd start digging through the Chrome settings, see if you're blocking any particular websites. It may be coming from a third-party website. Sometimes sites do this. We do it, for instance. We have our content for our webpage comes from one server, but the contents come from a different server. If you've got add-ons turned on in Chrome, you might try temporarily disabling them.
Okay, yeah, I can read the comments on Tech Guy Lab.
Okay, that's good. That means JavaScript's working, at least.
Okay.
Make sure the site, these are all chat room suggestions, make sure the site is trusted in your security settings. Using Windows?
Yes.
Yeah. You might check your internet options and see what level of security you've set. Make sure that, you know, it should be, I would reset it to the default. You can turn the security up. But mostly, I would guess it's your secure. It's some security program. If you've got a bunch of them running, it's some security program you're using. This is one of the reasons I generally don't recommend the big security suites, like Norton 360, because they tend to do a lot more than just protect you from viruses. They try to get too secure. You've tried it in different browsers, so it's probably not a Chrome setting. It's much more likely a global system setting. You might also try creating, just as a, this is always a good diagnostic, a new user account. I have on all my computers a dummy user account that I don't use, so I don't mess it up. You can log out of your account, log into this dummy account. I call it Ghost on all my machines because it's a ghost account, and see if there's a problem there. Those are all suggestions, none of which necessarily are going to fix the problem. Hey, thank you for the call, Mike. And the chat room has just been great with some all kinds of suggestions. So we'll put some of the best ones in the website, since you can read the comments there. TechGuyLabs.com. All right, now let's say hi to Paul in Palmdale. Nicely alliterated. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm very well. What can I do for you?
Actually, you have it backwards. I don't want to put my TV on my laptop. I want to put my laptop on my TV.
Ah, cool.
I have an external hard drive that I have a lot of movies on, and I'm tired of trying to burn DVDs because it seems like only half of those discs work.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that because you've already got it in date. Now, tell me a little bit about your TV. You have a standard HD TV?
I have a plasma.
Yeah, good.
But it does not have a VGA.
Right.
Connector.
That's probably the least good way to do it anyway. That's analog. You want to do it in digital form. Your laptop, I take it, does not have HDMI out.
No, I would have to go from VGA to some sort of box converter or something, and then go to HDMI into my
So that's going to take, that's too bad because it's digital. You have a digital TV. You would like to not use any analog components in this. No VGA, nothing, because VGA is going to downgrade it. Then you're going to put it back into digital and you're going to lose some quality. Ideal would be just to take it right out. So it really is going to depend on the capabilities of the laptop and of the television. Many modern laptops have the capability of playing video back through something called DLNA. Intel calls it Wi-Fi Direct, I think. It'll play video through Wi-Fi. So there's a lot of capabilities. An older laptop's not going to have those since you have VGA. I think you have an older laptop. We have to take a break. I'm going to give you some ideas for ways to do this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Let's do that while we're waiting. Give them a plug because they're a great company too. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but there's a lot of legal stuff, a lot of legal documents you can create yourself with a little help. That's where LegalZoom comes in. LegalZoom can help you do an LLC, or that's how we did our LLC 8 years ago now in 2005. They could do an S-Corp, a C-Corp, the incorporation. They could do trademarks. A lot of this stuff is very easy. Wills, trusts, it's all very easy to do. You just walk through a questionnaire, and I tell you, you don't need to pay a lawyer. The LLC, $99. $99 plus filing fees, but you know you can't get around the state filing fees. $69, I can't remember what the total was. It was very affordable. I couldn't afford a lawyer at the time. And by the way, even though we have lawyers now, it's still in effect. That's our incorporation. You can do a will for $69. If you haven't done a will, you ought to. Otherwise, the courts determine what happens to your kids, your assets. You don't want that. Simple will, $69. Living trusts, they can do. 12 years LegalZoom's been around. Over 2 million Americans have used them. You can use them for trademarks, for patents, for copyrights, NDAs. It's an online process that guides you step by step, easy to use. You get total customer support. In fact, sometimes it happens you have a question that you feel like I need to talk to an attorney. They've even got now, and this is new, the LegalZoom legal plan that for a pre-negotiated flat rate will get you access to an attorney in your state. You can even look at the attorney's profile and unedited reviews to find out if they're, you know, good, helpful, and all that. I really like LegalZoom. I think if you have a business, if you have a brand, maybe just even a name of a blog, you should trademark it. You should protect yourself. And it's so easy to do. You don't need an attorney. You just need LegalZoom.com. Self-help services at your specific direction. Or speak to a legal plan attorney and get your questions answered and ongoing advice. To get a special thank you for using LegalZoom through our show, make sure you enter the offer code TECHGUY when you check out. You'll get $10 off. Just so that they know you heard it on the Tech Guy show. LegalZoom.com. Offer code is TECHGUY. Make sure you protect yourself. It's easy to do. Paige in the chat room says, I've used LegalZoom for my will and it was well worth it. Yeah, you got to make a will. You got to make a will. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Phone number 8888 Ask Leo. You'll be talking to the leather, the lovely Heather. See, that must, Dr. Dean must have done that once.
I don't think
lovely Heather
actually.
Leather.
You almost said my like college nickname.
What was that?
Heather Leather.
Heather Leather. Oh, I don't know.
It was
if
the
I 80s. Know about
People
that.
Wore a lot of leather.
The lovely Heather Hobbit, who is here taking the phone calls, and I think we were in the middle of a call with Paul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul in Palmdale.
Yes.
But a really great question. So you have an older laptop because it's got a VGA port. And so it probably doesn't have Wi-Fi Direct or any of the things that Intel's put in the last couple of years. Probably doesn't even support DLNA. Your TV, let me ask you about that. Does it have a USB port? Because some of the more modern TVs, you can plug in a hard drive with a USB port, and the TV will recognize it, navigate it, and play stuff from it.
No, my TV does not have USB.
Okay.
But my surround sound amplifier or whatever, it has HDMI. I just have to convert that.
Well, and again, I don't want you to if we can avoid it because that's analog to digital and back again. And
I know, but my plasma TV, I got it for a good price. It was like $500 for a 42-inch plasma. The only problem is it doesn't have very many connections to it.
It does have HDMI, obviously.
Yes, it does have HDMI.
Well, there certainly are boxes go from VGA to HDMI, and that would work fine.
I mean, I think that's what I have to do. Because I don't see any other way that I can, and I'm not technically savvy.
Yeah, it's really an issue of what's the best way to do it. I mean, certainly that's a way to do it.
Yes, if I had a USB, I wouldn't have the problem, but I have to run it through my laptop,
right.
And I don't know how, and that's why I call the master.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, there are affordable and fairly effective VGA to HDMI adapters because it is making it's not a simple connection. It's making changes.
Yeah.
So it's not really an adapter; it's a converter.
Right. I also saw that I have to plug in my external speaker into
yes.
that box also. And I'm hoping that that does go through my surround sound. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to look great. Sound as best as it can, but...
No, it will. So what you're going to do is you're going to plug the... in fact, there are some that will take the USB from the computer and go into the HDMI converter.
Oh, really?
That would be the best way because then it would stay digital. It would be added... The reason is HDMI carries out audio and video. So this box is going to take video from one source, audio from another source... merge them into a digital signal and put it out. Now, you also want a box that will be smart enough to sync the audio and the video. It gets more and more complicated.
Well, that's the thing. How do I control my external hard drive if it's not hooked up to my laptop?
No, it's going to be. This is going to come out of your. This is going to be your laptop playing it back.
Okay.
If you had a TV that could hook up to a hard drive, it does the controlling. It will actually browse the hard drive.
Okay, that would be great.
You know, Roku boxes will also do that. Roku has, the new Roku 3 has a USB port you could plug a USB hard drive or a USB thumb drive into, and the Roku has software that will read the drive and say, I can play these files. You want me to play one of these? All of this will work, but getting that laptop and the TV, I think it may be that we've just got to do VGA to HDMI. The place I'd go to get that converter, by the way, that'll charge you the least, is monoprice.com. Monoprice.com. And they're talking about $50 for this kind of box. It's not horribly expensive.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yep.
And I had one more question real quick about a subwoofer. I have to have a powered subwoofer for my surround sound.
Right. It has a little single channel output for a subwoofer.
Yes.
Yep.
Speaker pointing down or pointing out?
Use the speaker as it's designed. So I have two subwoofers, and one has a downward-facing speaker. It's got little feet to raise it up off the ground, and then the speaker fires down, and then another fires out. The speaker design is what determines that.
Okay, so it really doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. The reason you got to defer to the speaker designer is he may be assuming some effects from bouncing it off the floor. And so if his speaker is designed to fire downward, then you want it to fire downward. But because it's so bassy, the reason all of this doesn't matter as much is your ear is not able to determine the signal, the direction of a bass, a lower frequency signal as well as the higher frequency
right.
signal. So
right.
your subwoofer can be somewhere off in the corner and it still sounds like it's coming from the TV.
Okay.
Yeah. I think downward face, you know, you can buy downward facing, you could buy outward facing. I think in general, outward facing is just fine. Somebody in the chat room is pointing out it's true that if you have somebody downstairs from you, downward facing may not be ideal.
No, that I don't have a problem with that. But I think the cheaper ones that I found are down facing,
right.
and I didn't know if that would...
The reason is they use the floor, and by the way, a carpet would not be good for that.
They have carpet.
Yeah, so don't get it downward facing. The carpet will absorb it. What they want to do is use the wood floor as a resonance box a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So you don't. Yeah, I wouldn't get a downward facing on a carpet. That's a bad idea.
Okay. Hey, you know what? You're the man.
Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Why, it just frustrates me. You know, the when you have a movie that you've taken from a DVD, which is digital, and you've put it on the hard drive, it's digital. And then you're sending it to a plasma display. The display is digital. What you want to do is keep it digital bits all the way. What you don't want to do, but he's going to have to do, is convert the digital from the hard drive to an analog output, the VGA. The computer will do that. Then take the analog output, the VGA, convert it back into bits. That down and up is going to affect the video quality, unfortunately. But I think that's the only way he can do it. And he's going to have problems with lip sync as well because that process is going to slow the video down, right? But the audio is not going to get slowed down. So the video will get the audio will get a little bit ahead of the video. And that's, even if it's a few milliseconds, the most annoying thing in the world. What you want is you want to find a way to just take it digital all the way, audio and video through the same channel. I Lover says, just buy a new computer. Yeah, just buy a new computer. Or a new TV. Yeah, yeah. That'll do it. I generally don't try to recommend, I try not to recommend buying new stuff. That is not my goal. Bill is in Woodland Hills, our next caller. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Mr. Laporte.
Hey, Bill.
My first time on radio, so if I seem a little nervous, I apologize.
You have a good radio voice, Bill. You could do this all the time.
I'm shocked. this week, the first thing I heard in the morning is that one of our customers who called in said that our website was infected. So I went and started looking on Google Chrome at my other websites, and I said, well, they're all infected.
Yes.
Things are infected.
This is something to take seriously. So
I get a message shortly thereafter that from this company saying, we've detected that you have an infection. Now, I remember you talking to things about registry mechanic or something similar to those where they show errors and stuff, and then they sell you something, and it's really nothing.
You're right.
Really not doing
anything. Don't fall for that one, but this might be more serious. What's your website?
I would. It's fixed now.
Oh, okay. Then I won't. Then I don't need to go there. So here's the thing. Here's what happens. Google and Microsoft does this too, by the way. As it's crawling around on the internet for its search engine, also notes if it sees infections, and these have certain signatures that Google can see when it's crawling around. It goes, oh, you've got a virus on your website. Correct. And so what it'll do is then add your website to a database, and then anybody using Google Chrome or Microsoft Internet Explorer or Apple Safari that goes to your site will get a big warning saying this site is infected with malware. Take that seriously. That's real. That is not one of those fake warnings. I'll talk about what to do next. So Bill, in Woodland Hills.
Yes.
His website got a malware warning in the Chrome browser. That means there was probably malware sitting on it.
Yeah, I was explained to by the gentleman a thing popped up on my screen from another company saying we can fix this.
Yeah, that makes me more nervous. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, that's why I called you.
Yeah. So, but you had a client who went to your site and it did in fact say there's a problem on your website.
And my other website, which I checked myself, did have a web virus on it as well, or malware or something.
Who runs who runs your servers?
GoDaddy.
GoDaddy. Very common problem.
By the person who told me this, that it was called from a WordPress blog, that it wasn't up to date, and thus
that's right.
It had gotten that they have these crawler things, these viruses that go around and detect these things and infect your entire system.
That's right.
Your WordPress is not up to date.
That's exactly right. So it can happen all the time. So it's just like infecting your personal computer. It's infecting your server. The problem with GoDaddy is you're on a shared server with a lot of other companies' sites, maybe as many as 1,000 other company sites on that server, and it's not hard for a bad guy to infect the whole server. So this is very commonly a problem on GoDaddy servers, but anywhere you're running, I'm running WordPress on my own managed server, and if you don't keep it up to date, you are always vulnerable. Bad guys are constantly scanning the web looking for vulnerabilities on servers. It's happened to us here at twit.tv. It happened because we had a website designed by a company, didn't do a very good job, and they added a module that was insecure. The website itself was up to date and secure, but they added just a little plug-in that wasn't. Same problem. Bad guy goes around, finds this. It's called an exploit. When you could take advantage or exploit a flaw in software, it's called an exploit. They found this exploit. They do it automatedly, by the way, and so it's very easy and very fast. And what happens when they can get onto your site, what they try to do is then take advantage of the fact that people are visiting you. And they infect your site in such a way that somebody visiting you gets infected on their personal computer. So that's what's really interesting here. This is a great way, if you're a bad guy, to get malware on a lot of systems. They sell kits in public, in the open. You can go to a website where you can buy a kit that you can put on a commandeered web server that has hundreds, sometimes thousands of different exploits on it. This kit runs in the background silently when anybody visits your website and tries all of these things to get into their computer and infect their computer. Because that's the end goal for all of this. These kits are cheap, $50, $100. I mean, it's really, it's big business now. So, and it's widespread. So Google and Microsoft are very smart. When they find these, they put up a warning so that when you use their browsers, the browser checks the database and says it's an infected server. Your job as the man who runs the server is to say, oh my goodness, and fix it. Find the exploit, just as you would on your home system. Find the exploit, remove it, upgrade WordPress, lock down your system as best you can. And you need a good sysadmin to do this, because it's just as fixing your computer is a tough thing to do, it's even more difficult with a server.
But I hired a company. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's good to hire a company to do that.
Yeah, I paid them $300 for 5 websites.
Fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I thought so.
And then Google, after a period of time, notices it's gone and takes down that warning.
Great.
So you're fine. Now, I'm a little worried about this pop-up on your home computer. That's something different. I don't know if that's a coincidence or they noticed you had the problem on your server. I don't know why you saw that on your home computer.
Somehow or another, they must have spiders detecting people who have my issue.
Maybe. But that's not the company you use to fix the problem.
Yes, it is.
Oh. Now I'm a little worried.
So am I. So that's why I'm calling.
So let me make sure I got this right. So you had the problem on your computer. I mean, on your website.
I noticed the same thing that our client.
Yeah, you had the big red warning. Google says, or Microsoft says, this site is infected. Proceed at your
Google
risk.
Google Chrome, yeah.
So now, then on your home computer, you got a pop-up saying your server has a problem?
Yes.
How did they do that?
I run my business out of my home.
And it said what? It said that your server is infected?
Yes.
And call this number?
Yep. And they fixed it within 12 hours or so. Maybe sooner.
My concern is that they fixed it but did something else. I'm puzzled by this. I've seen these pop-ups before just as a virus alert. You know, you've got a virus on your computer. If you see that, that's completely bogus. I'm thinking it's got to be the guy who did it.
Well, that's why I was calling to see if you could check out the legitimacy of this company.
What's the name of the company?
iLockout.com.
iLockout.com. See, the only person, in my opinion, that would be able to do this is the person who hacked your website. That's what I'm really concerned about. If the guy who hacked your website knew that, he could then put something on the website that would then infect your computer and at some point say, call me. the Smart Website Defense. I'm looking at their website. This looks legitimate. We can have your site fixed and submitted for unblacklisting. They did what they said they would do. They fixed Drupal, Joomla, WordPress. I mean, this is legitimate. My only concern is, how did they know to contact you? That's what puzzles me. I don't know if this is a hacker. This looks pretty legitimate. Let's see if in their FAQ they explain it. How did this happen? How do they know? How will you alert me when I get hacked? You'll be alerted by email, text messaging, or both. Maybe GoDaddy, you know what I'm wondering? Maybe, okay. Here's my suspicion. Perhaps this is a service. GoDaddy sells so many additional services when you buy a GoDaddy site. Perhaps this was sold to you without your even knowing. This was on your site. Anybody in the chat room have any experience? I would guess that this is something you bought. Maybe you didn't know it. And that's how they knew and how they contacted you. Did you give them, how did they get access to the service? Did you give them the login for your website?
No. No.
Wait a minute. Okay, let me get this straight.
Wait, maybe to fix it, I did. Yeah. Not initially.
No, but to fix it. Do you think you maybe bought this from GoDaddy as one of the many things that they sold you when you registered your domain? I bet you did.
I've had that with them for 12 years or so.
So you wouldn't remember?
I'm sure I haven't purchased anything like this. And I was told by another webmaster that this was an infection that was about 4 weeks ago on a malicious attack on WordPress.
Right. No, but that's well known. I don't know. Let me do some research on this company. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Doing a little research. Unfortunately, we brought down the site. It was iLockout.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Bill, we brought the site down because we mentioned it on the air, and now it's crashed.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's not unusual. We do that to sites all the time. It doesn't mean anything bad. But I really need to understand this. And we were talking off the air, and your wife said that they called you because there's a difference in them calling you and there's a pop up on your screen from them.
She's the one that must have answered the phone because she said they called me.
Okay, that would make sense. So here's the deal. There could be a guy, he could just be a little guy, going around, and every time he sees this message as he's surfing the web, or maybe he has a crawler doing it, he then goes to the registrar, GoDaddy, and says, who owns this site? And a lot of times, if you don't have domain privacy, which I guess you don't, you should check, that your phone number is listed. So he just calls a number and said, hey, I see you have a problem. I can fix it. Give me your password, $300, and I'll fix it. That all by itself, that all makes sense. And it could be very legitimate. It's just some guy who's apparently got a way to do it.
I guess.
Yeah, so I don't think that that's necessarily harmful, especially since it seemed to have worked.
No, it worked.
And he got you back online, and the only way to do that is to remove the malware from the site.
Mm-hmm.
I would be, in future, a little cautious, but you did need to hire somebody to do this.
I didn't have a clue what to do. He did help me out. They started with, we went into the FTP files and started taking certain things down, like the blog, the WordPress blog, and removing those files from GoDaddy. And then from there, they took over, basically, after that, when they called. And I said, okay, $300 for five domains to keep them safe, and they scan them every day.
But this wasn't GoDaddy. This was iLockout.
Yes.
So GoDaddy tried, but they weren't able to fix it.
They may have fixed it somewhat, but I just wanted the secure... I don't want anybody going to one of my websites and seeing something like that.
No, that's it's embarrassing. It was embarrassing when it happened to us. Now, we have sysadmins, people who we pay to do this, and they clean it up. But it's hard to clean up. It sounds like he did. Be honest, I don't have anything against this guy. His name is Andrew X, and it looks like it looks like he did a good job, and he's probably just an individual who set this up, and it's his little business. And I don't see anything wrong with it, frankly. Keep an eye on that credit card.
Yeah.
He's got your credit card number. Keep an eye on your site. But I think this sounds completely legitimate. But he's just a small guy. He had him. What I would suggest you do in future, although in this case you benefited from it, is look at domain privacy on your website. Because, you know, in 12 years ago when you registered this domain, it was pretty much a matter of course. You gave him your name, your address, and your phone number. Mm-hmm. And that's on public record. All somebody has to do is a Whois lookup on your domain name. They do a Whois lookup, and there it is, your name, address, and phone number. GoDaddy now and most sites will sell you or offer you a Whois privacy, which effectively obscures your name and address and phone number. And you might want to do that. I do that. But on the other hand, you benefited because the guy was able to find you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's not... I think that's not really a problem. I think I can't give you a full clean bill of health because I don't know the guy. I'm going to call him after we get off the air and find out. But I would guess this is okay.
They seem like very legitimate, decent people
to
me.
Yeah. So good. So while
they
did
solve a problem.
And they solved the problem.
Give me the problem.
I mean, if you're really paranoid, they now have your credit card number and they have access to your website. I'd change your website password.
Okay.
That's a good idea anyway. You know, make sure all your passwords are changed so he can't get back in.
I'm pretty sure I never gave him the passwords. I don't even know how he did that.
Oh, you did.
Maybe I did, I just don't remember.
Yeah, no, I think you did, or maybe he contacted GoDaddy, and I don't know. I guess we could call him on the air. Should I? Do you have his phone number, chat room? I can call him on the air. Why not? I don't even know. I have to figure out how to use this darn phone system. Okay, so Heather, you call him and just say, is it all right to put you on the air? And Heather's gonna call him. If you can give him the phone number in the chat room. Somebody had it in the chat room. I can't get to his website anymore. At least I'd like to call him and apologize. No, don't. I think is not what we want to see. If somebody knows the number, I saw it earlier in there. Then we could see if we could look him up. Heather can call him. I don't think it's any. By the way, perfect time to call him. It's 13:37. It's the leet time. We'll call the leet guy. It's if you think about it, a guy. This is kind of enterprising. This guy knows how. You know, he's a good. Maybe he was a hacker at one point, but he knows how to get malware off of sites. What a great way to get a little business going here. I could call his Whois. I could actually do the Whois on him, huh? I think I did. We can call that number. Go ahead, Heather. Call that 866 number that Man Chicken gave you. I think we could trust somebody named Man Chicken. He's in Rockland, California. It's a 916 number also. call we're going to see if we can do a little little investigation into the depths of the web. It seems completely possible that this guy would just be a a smart tech guy. We'll vet him. I don't know how we'll know if he's honest or not, but you could be the judge. Is he on the line?
Asking for just whoever picks up the phone.
Yeah, say I want to talk to Andrew X, please.
Andrew X, that's it, right? It's busy.
Yeah, I bet it's busy.
Someone else is calling him. Darn
it. I bet everybody in the chat room's calling him.
All right, you guys, clear the line. Seeing another number, too.
What would Michael Finney do, the consumer guy for...
he'd have those Seven on Your Side people call
him. Yeah, he'd have them call. Does he do it, or does he do it... Does he have some... He has a team.
I think he does it, actually, like you. You know, he's boots on the ground a lot of times.
It's fun.
He's awesome.
All right, well, we'll keep trying to get this guy.
Shoot. There should be a readout. Oh, there we go. This is another first for us.
Yeah. I don't know how this phone system works.
We're finding out.
Is it ringing?
It should be again. Let's see. A second even.
Yeah. It's magic.
Getting that busy.
Let him know that he'll be on the radio. I don't want to surprise him or anything. I think legally we have to let him know before we put him on
the
air. Yeah. he's wondering why all of a sudden is my site down and is my phone ringing off the hook? What did I do?
If you want,
I'll take another call.
Scott in Ithaca will be real quick.
Let's do Scott. Leo, oops, that's not Scott. Hold on, I'm going to get Scott in Ithaca here while Heather gets Andrew on the line. Hey, Scott, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how's it going? I was kind of writhing there because I wanted to make a couple comments about what you were just talking about, too.
Yeah.
I host my oral surgery website on GoDaddy, and you can have somebody have full, you can give somebody access to your full GoDaddy account, or you can give them the FTP password for your website and then have them do something, and if it's just transient, you can change it, and that's probably the most secure way to do it. But here's my question, and this isn't why I called. Here's my question.
By the way, unfortunately, Bill didn't really, I don't think he remembered what he did, so we can't really track this down. He doesn't even remember how the guy got a hold of him.
Yeah, the most specific way is to give the FTP password.
That would be simple, because then you can get there, you can see the files, and you can remove any infections.
And you don't have access to your entire account.
Right.
But here's the question that should be popping up. What would stop somebody from being really, really high-tech in today's world and installing malware on people's websites and then saying, hey, I can fix your website?
Well, exactly.
That's my first question.
That would be certainly a way to do it, and he's made $300, hasn't he?
And if he does it to 1,000 people a year, that's a good living. Money.
Could very well be. Yeah. Scott, you got a good point. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Heather has been working hard. Andrew did not answer the phone, but we left a message.
Right.
And
he must be doing tech support with yet another big fan.
Hey, innocent till proven guilty. Right. It's a completely legitimate business idea. It's a little bit like ambulance chasing, but really you're doing a big service. If somebody's got a website, I know because it happened to me, and you go, oh my gosh, what do I do? We have people who can handle that. But if you're, just some got a website and you don't know what to do, it's awfully nice to have somebody call you and say, hey, I see you've got a malware infection. He should say something like, I please apologize for interrupting your day, but I got your number from GoDaddy. I see you have malware and I can get rid of it for you. Would you like me to? That's legitimate. It's also conceivable, as Scott said, this could be a whole scam, but I don't think so. I don't know why. Maybe I'm a trusting person. Last segment of the day, let's go to my friend Mark Sekernig, iDoc Mark in Syracuse, New York. Hi, iDoc Mark.
A whole hour north from Ithaca, and here we are in Syracuse. How are you, Leo? Well,
it's hard to believe there's anything north of Ithaca, but there is.
A lot north of Ithaca. Leo, I'm sitting here with my MacBook Air and two thumb drives plugged in. I was stuck yesterday because one of them, which I've been using, I have both of them generally, just I leave them plugged into my, what's that thing with the weird name that sits at home that goes to the router? Pogo plug.
Oh, yeah.
And I can access them. It says 64 and a 16. So I pulled the 64 one out and took it to drag some files off the MacBook Air and put them in it, and it won't take them. They bounce. When I click through the info, it says, under sharing and permissions, you can only read. I have no idea how to set it that way.
This happens sometimes with Macs, that the drive becomes read only, or it's because the drive is damaged. You know how the Mac always says, you know how the Mac always says, hey, you should eject this drive before you remove it?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't happen a lot, but that's what can happen.
And that's because, well, it was in the Pogo plug, so I didn't have anything to eject from.
Yeah, it could have been writing to it when it was on the Pogo plug and you pulled it. It can happen. So I don't know how you fix it. I mean, it's an error in the partition.
Could I try dragging everything off it and would I maybe still be able to force reformat it?
Oh, yeah. You can restore it with the disk. Yeah, you know, if there's nothing on it you need, then there's no problem.
I can pull stuff off it. I can access it. I just can't. I can read it.
Right.
So I should be able to pull those files off and send them somewhere else.
You can. Oh, yeah. You can use Disk Utility to erase, reformat. That'll put it all back to the way it was.
Okay.
The problem is that the partitioning got screwed up by something. Could be a premature ejection. Could have been a lightning strike. Could have been a lot of. Don't be you giggling. Stop giggling, Mark.
Premature ejection.
I have
a similar question, a related question, because one of the things I'm having challenges with, place to store pictures.
Wait a minute. Before you say that.
Yes.
The chat room is pointing out, was that drive readable before on the Mac? Was it a readable drive?
Oh, yeah. I've always been able to do both.
It was a Mac formatted drive. Okay. That's what I was assuming. They're saying, well, what if it's an NTFS drive or some sort of drive format that's... No. It's a standard drive.
Nice. A 64 gigabyte thumb drive.
Yeah. It was formatted for the Mac. Okay.
One of the things I look to do is places to put pictures. And with Apple's old... whatever they called it, the one they canceled last year, their cloud.
Yeah, the gallery in Mobile Me,
It was so easy.
I know.
I don't know how to use cloud. Is there a way to send pictures up where when I use it from Dropbox, I have to put a link picture by picture to send out a link?
No. The new Dropbox will let you share that folder as an album.
The whole folder?
Yeah.
Is it tricky to set up that way?
No, it's very straightforward.
Is Apple Cloud something to let me do that too? I know
they took the gallery out with iCloud. And they killed it a couple of months ago, and I was sure they would replace it with something, and they didn't. So you're going to have to use some other service. Amazon has one. Google has one. You can use Dropbox.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they. I don't know why. I don't know what Apple's thinking.
Do I want to stick a folder full of pictures? Stick it there, or make it in the public?
I would make a new folder. Don't make it public. You're going to share it with just some specific people, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you can share it with them.
In Dropbox. Oh, thank you.
It's the easiest way to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Mark.
Hi,
Lulu the Papillon. Ozzy's here. Hey, did you fix your Twitter account?
Yeah.
You know you were hacked, right?
No, I didn't know.
Oh. You might want to fix that. I got a direct message from iDoc Mark that said, hey, click this link. You won't believe it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I clicked the link, and I didn't believe it. It was a fake Twitter site trying to get my login. I messaged you, but I guess maybe you couldn't. I don't know. Check your Twitter.
Liz and Leo, we should live so long.
Check your Twitter, too. Mark.
Take care.
Thank you,
sir.
Oh,
and Heather's wonderful.
Yeah, isn't she great?
Yeah, I'm the one that asked her how you're treating her.
Well, I hope she told...
You got rid of the kids in Sherman Oaks. That's too bad.
That's right. We gave her a chair. Now she doesn't have to do it standing up anymore. It's good. No, I didn't get rid of him. That's a long story, Mark. We'll save that for another day. Well, we're just going to have to defer that conversation about iLockout to another day because we haven't gotten a call back from Andrew, the proprietor. Maybe next week, though. I think this is something I'd like to continue to follow up on. Meanwhile, Drew is in Hollywood. Our next caller. Hi, Drew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, what's up, man? I love your show, bro.
Thank you.
I got a really easy one for you compared to the last couple. Speaking of Mother's Day, my mom 2 years ago got me a netbook, an Acer Aspire 1.
Yeah.
I really love it. But the screen broke and the keyboard got messed up. It's going to cost $150 to replace those. Minus the sentimental value, I'm looking at these things called Ultrabooks now. Yeah. Something under $300, and I do not want a tablet. I don't want a big honking laptop. I like a 10.1-inch screen. See if you could recommend something for me, man.
$300 is very low cost.
That's what my Aspire was. It's been awesome.
Yeah. Well, Acer continues to make low-cost, inexpensive notebooks. I'm pretty sure Acer has something in that $300 price range. That's about as low as I would recommend going. Those netbooks, they're cheap for a reason. They don't have the best quality components. You can, by the way, still use that netbook, I bet you, if you have a VGA output, and most of them do, you could attach a monitor to that, a keyboard and a mouse, and just pretend it's like not, it's a CPU and put it off to the side. Asus makes the VivoBook. That's $449. That's a very nice one. It's going to be a little tricky because the newer Ultrabooks have touch screens to take advantage of Windows 8. And that touch screen alone is about $150 cost to them. So you're not going to see a $300 touch screen notebook. In fact, a true Ultrabook, the point of the Ultrabook was we're going to make them below $1,000. So $300 is going to be a little low. You might look at, it's not a bad idea. Somebody in the chat room said, what about a Chromebook? If mostly what you do is surfing the web, email, that kind of thing, Google makes these Chromebooks. Samsung and Asus both have Chromebooks that are around under $300. $250, I think, for the Chromebook from Asus. $250, and it's a great little... It's not a full operating system, but it's great. You might want to look at those, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, everybody. See you later. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.